I've got a hangover.
No. You hit your head on the floor, Sophie said.
Hal rose up on his hands and knees with a scramble. I can't stay, he said. I've got to rescue that fool Sophie.
I'm here, Sophie said, shaking his shoulder. But so is Miss Angorian. Get up and do something about her, quickly.
The stick was entirely flames by now. Martha's hair was frizzling, and it had dawned on Miss Angorian that the scarecrow would burn. She was manoeuvring to get the hovering stick into the doorway. As usual, Sophie thought, I didn't think it through. Hal only needed to take one look. He stood up in a hurry. He held out one hand and spoke a sentence of those words that lost themselves in claps of thunder. Plaster fell from the ceiling. Everything trembled, but the stick vanished, and Hal stepped back with a small, hard, black thing in his hand. It could have been a lump of cinder, except that it was the same shape as the thing Sophie had just pushed into Hal's chest. Miss Angorian whined like a wet fire and held out her arms imploringly.
I'm afraid not, Hal said. You've had your time. By the look of this, you were trying to get a new heart, too. You were going to take my heart and let Calcifer die, weren't you?
He held the black thing between both palms and pushed his hands together. The witch's old heart crumbled into black sand and soot and nothing. Miss Angorian faded away as it crumbled. As Howl opened his hands empty, the doorway was empty of Miss Angorian too. Another thing happened as well. The moment Miss Angorian was gone, the scarecrow was no longer there either. If Sophie had cared to look, she would have seen two tall men standing in the doorway smiling at one another. The one with the craggy face had ginger hair. The one with the green uniform had vaguer features and a lace shawl draped round the shoulders of his uniform. But Howl turned to Sophie just then.
"Grey doesn't really suit you," he said. "I thought that when I first saw you."
"Calcifer's gone," Sophie said. "I had to break your contract." Howl looked a little sad, but he said,
"We were both hoping you would. Neither of us wanted to end up like the witch and Miss Angorian. Would you call your hair ginger?"
"Red gold," Sophie said.
Not much had changed about Howl that she could see. Now he had his heart back, except maybe that his eyes seemed a deeper colour, more like eyes, and less like glass marbles.
"Unlike some people's," she said, "it's natural."
"I've never seen why people put such value on things being natural," Howl said, and Sophie knew then that he was scarcely changed at all.
If Sophie had had any attention to spare, she would have seen Prince Justin and Wizard Solomon shaking hands and clapping one another delightedly on the back.
"I'd better get back to my royal brother," Prince Justin said. He walked up to Fanny as the most likely person and made her a deep, courtly bow. "Am I addressing the lady of this house?"
Not really," Fanny said, trying to hide her broom behind her back. "The lady of the house is Sophie."
"Or will be shortly," Mrs. Fairfax said, beaming benevolently.
Hal said to Sophie,
"I've been wondering all along if you would turn out to be that lovely girl I met on May Day. Why were you so scared then?"
If Sophie had been attending, she would have seen Wizard Solomon go up to Letty. Now he was himself, it was clear that Wizard Solomon was at least as strong-minded as Letty was. Letty looked quite nervous as Solomon loomed craggily over her.
"It seemed to be the prince's memory I had of you, and not my own at all," he said.
"That's quite all right," Letty said bravely. "It was a mistake."
"But it wasn't," protested Wizard Solomon. "Would you let me take you on as a pupil, at least?"
Letty went fiery red at this and did not seem to know what to say. That seemed to Sophie to be Letty's problem. She had her own. Hal said, "I think we ought to live happily ever after." And she thought he meant it. Sophie knew that living happily ever after with Hal would be a good deal more eventful than any story made it sound, though she was determined to try. "It should be hair-raising," added Hal. "And you'll exploit me," Sophie said.
"And then you'll cut up all my suits to teach me," said Hal.
If Sophie or Hal had had any attention to spare, they might have noticed that Prince Justin, Wizard Solomon, and Mrs. Fairfax were all trying to speak to Hal, and that Fanny, Martha, and Letty were plucking at Sophie's sleeves, while Michael was dragging at Hal's jacket.
"That was the neatest use of words of power I ever saw from anyone," Mrs. Fairfax said. "I wouldn't have known what to do with that creature. As I often say..."
"Sophie," said Letty, "I need your advice."
"Wizard Hal," said Wizard Solomon, "I must apologize for trying to bite you so often. In the normal way, I wouldn't dream of setting teeth in a fellow countryman."
"Sophie, I think this gentleman is a prince," said Fanny.
"Sir," said Prince Justin, "I believe I must thank you for rescuing me from the witch."
"Sophie," said Martha, "the spell's off you. Did you hear?" But Sophie and Hal were holding one another's hands and smiling, quite unable to stop.
"Don't bother me now," said Hal. "I only did it for the money."
"Liar," said Sophie.
"I said," Michael shouted, "the calcifers come back."
That did get Hal's attention, and Sophie's too. They looked at the grate, where, sure enough, the familiar blue face was flickering among the logs.
"You didn't need to do that," Hal said.
"I don't mind, as long as I can come and go," Calcifer said. "Besides, it's raining out there in Market Chipping."
The End. You've been listening to Howl's Moving Castle by Diana Wynne Jones, narrated by Jenny Sterlin and directed by Matt Wilson. This book is copyrighted 1986 by Diana Wynne Jones. This recording is copyrighted 2008 by Recorded Books. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.